Samson. Beautiful.
Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 42. On this week's show, we continue our Disney Movie Hour series as we look back at the 1953 animated classic Peter Pan. To my left, as always, is Brian. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
Across from me is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Eventually, Scott will be here. Hello, Scott. Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. That was Bloom by Pogo. You can find that video and more over at youtube.com/Pogo. His music at soundcloud.com/Pogo Mix. And his website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That is D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, if you search for Disney Magic Hour, you can find our group. And if you head on over to iTunes and search for Disney Magic Hour, leave a 5-star review. We will read your review on the air, as we will later on today. I believe we have 3 more reviews to read. And if you head on over to Google Music Play and search for Disney Magic Hour in the podcast section, you will also find us for you Android listeners. But also, if you have Android, you can just use SoundCloud. You can find us on soundcloud.com/Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And that is the intros.
Very nice.
Very nice. Now, normally we go right into our film, which again, we're going to be talking about Peter Pan this week. But there was some interesting news that popped up this week, and I wanted to talk about. Number one, I would say number one, just because of my interest level in it, I guess, would be that the games division of Disney has been closed. And along with it, Disney Infinity is no longer. There will be only 2 more additions for Finding Dory and for Alice.
Yep.
And that is it. Then that's the end of it. No Rogue One playset that was heavily said to be coming or anything else. No Disney 4.0, which was already kind of canceled earlier this year.
Yeah, that was.
Which
it
wasn't canceled. They just said, like, we're just going to keep adding to 3.0 instead of doing another series another year.
Yeah, because 3.0 was, I think they finally hit their stride with it, actually.
I feel like they did, but I also feel like it suffers from just the playsets not being very engaging, most of them.
Most of them, but I felt the Star Wars ones, well, the first, the Twilight of the Republic and the Rise of the Empire ones were both
Twilight's their best one.
Twilight's their best one. But then The Force Awakens
that
one
wasn't
was
good.
Boring, no.
Yeah, that wasn't really good. That was kind of boring, and the end fight with just like, you know, shoot the red barrels thing, I don't know, it just didn't seem very engaging. I never was a fan of I can't use every character in every playset.
Yeah, I think that was like one of the most annoying things because it would have been really fun. Like, if you beat the playset, then let me go back in there and run around in Tatooine with Stitch or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, to play that game with all those characters really, I think, would have been so much more engaging.
Yeah.
Not saying that the gameplay was so incredible. Now, I understand there are certain points where it's like you have to use the Force on the Star Wars one.
Yeah.
But there was other ways. Like, everyone had a laser blaster. So, you know, when you played with Boba Fett, you didn't use the Force.
Yeah.
So they should have figured out, I think, how to make every character playable in every sequence. Because then characters like Baloo, all right, Baloo was released recently. All I can do is use them in the Toy box.
Yeah.
That's not really the best way of implementing all your stuff. But the bigger picture is, though, that it wasn't like they went in and they said, we got to cancel Infinity. They canceled their games division.
Yeah,
like, they are no longer going to be self-publishing video games.
What else did they put out, like, beyond Infinity? I don't even know. I'm not, like,
I'm sure they did a lot of, you know, direct-to-movie kind of stuff and mobile stuff. Now, obviously, they're not going to be doing that either.
Yeah, they had a good amount of mobile stuff.
I have some of their mobile stuff.
But now a lot of their mobile stuff is done via a third party.
Oh, okay.
Like,
okay.
Gameloft is the people who developed Disney Kingdoms, which is the one that's out right now.
Okay.
Which is a total... I don't think it's very good anything. It's just tapping the screen and trying to get you to spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
That being said, I do play it every day.
Yeah. Well, my favorite was the Where's My Water.
Oh, okay.
The one.
Oh, Where's My Mickey?
Where's My Mickey? Yeah.
Like, yeah, that was, know, yeah, that was a
good one. Those were all Disney.
Well, I did the Frozen Free Fall, and I have the Inside Out Bubbles one. I like those.
I'm not sure if those are actually developed by Disney.
Yeah, that's
though.
The thing. I don't know.
So so basically what they're going to be doing is the third-party licensing, as they used to do for a very long time previous to this. And who knows? Will Infinity come back in a different form? I wouldn't bet on it. I think the toys to real life thing has kind of hit
its... I think it's peaked, yeah.
I think it's peaked, and I think that everyone is noticing that.
Yeah.
I know that they have the Lego one right now, but that's... You thought Infinity was expensive?
Yeah.
No, that one I think it's worse.
The Lego one is much worse, and that has walls where inside the game...
You have to get...
You have to have certain characters. Now, I know, and you might be saying, like, well, yeah, we'll play a Star Wars one, you have to have the Star Wars characters. Yeah, but when you bought the playset, it came with the figure, and you'd be able to play through the whole thing.
Yeah, with those.
There are certain playsets, quote-unquote, with the Lego that if you don't... You can buy that set, but if you don't have a certain figure, you can't access an area.
Yeah.
That's insane to me. Like, so that's why I never got into that one. But EA, I mean, I know that EA right now is working on 3 Star Wars games. Mm-hmm. They're doing Battlefront 2, which is going to focus on the new films.
Newer stuff, yep.
So that's really, really cool. Yep. And they're working on 2, as of now, untitled third-person action games.
Yeah, the one they said is third person action game, and then I think the third one they haven't really said much about. Just except
no,
for
they
the...
did. They said it was third person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they just haven't described what that means.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, the other one they made it sound like it was kind of like a shoot 'em up like type of third person.
Yeah, like we don't know if it's going to be a squad based thing,
exactly.
You know, or if it's going to be a new version of Force Awakens Unleashed. You know what?
I would love to see something along the lines of, you know, maybe it's going to be something along the lines of like a Tomb Raider, Uncharted type of like really story driven.
Well, that was what 3131 was that the name of it?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Yeah,
it was 3131 or 1313, which actually is also then referenced in the novel Dark Disciple with Quillan Voss and Asajj Ventress. That was going to be a very, to put it simply, a very Uncharted-esque kind of third person adventure action game, and it looked incredible.
Mm-hmm,
like the tech demo for that game made me think, oh, next-gen gaming looks really cool.
Yeah.
And then it just got canned.
Yep.
So now we're going to get something. I'm sure that we're going to get we're going to get some details at E3.
Oh, which for sure. It is less than a month away. Yeah. Well, at about a month. I'm exactly 1 month from when I'll be getting into Disney. And I know the Microsoft is the 13th, is their press conference, the Microsoft one. So
yeah.
I think the week during that weekend is EA, and I think EA has a press
the week
conference.
I move,
the week you move.
Ah, oh, it's a bummer.
I think the Fallout guys, Bethesda, they have theirs on that Saturday. The before.
Oh man,
yeah. So you'll have to.
That is a bummer.
But you can stream it to your phone while you're driving and listen to it.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I definitely will. Actually, that'll keep me up. Also, I'll be listening to that all day. So yeah, so the games division is no more, but. Really, they weren't doing anything great. I'm bummed about Infinity, but I wanted Infinity to be better than it was.
Yes.
I didn't think it was... I really loved the Star Wars Knights of the Republic playset.
Yeah.
And I liked the Rise of the Empire one, but all the other playsets I played, they were okay.
The Marvel ones were really disappointing.
Yeah.
The 2.0, Disney 2.0.
Oh, those were bad.
They were bad, the playsets.
How empty that city was, you know, in particular. And, I mean, the game never... It was very... clunky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It didn't control really that smoothly.
It loaded very slowly on the consoles. On the PC, it was much better, but then on the PC, they didn't have full controller support, and you couldn't use your base, which, guys, it's a USB port. Like, why can't you just implement this tech to work on my PC? There was a lot of things that were done oddly.
Yeah, there was.
But there was a lot of care, and they did love part of it. Now, I don't know. I guess no one really bought that Marvel Battlegrounds thing, but I heard that was okay.
We have it. I haven't played it.
Okay.
It's basically like a Smash Brothers from what I heard. Or Power Stone.
Yeah. Trust me, I remember Power Stone.
So I'm sure it would be fun, but I've fallen off. I haven't really played that in a long time.
Yeah, so bummer news, but you never know. Something better might come out of it. Maybe they'll think of this kind of interaction, cross-platforming, but with a better implementation.
I hope so, because I did like it. I like the idea of it, but like you said, the controls were clunky.
Yeah.
Even the build mode, like to build the... In the
toy box.
Yeah, what was the other thing that I liked? Oh, I liked the new farming system. That was fun.
You really liked the farming system.
It was a lot of fun.
You should get like a Harvest Moon sort of game or something.
You know what you should play? Because I guess you're playing the PC now because I saw you were playing Stellaris. Yeah. Stardew Valley.
Okay.
Is basically like...
Very lo-fi looking, right?
Yeah, but it's supposed to be, I think, very like Harvest Moon Legend of Zelda mix of type of gameplay. So you probably love that.
Okay. Okay. Great. You got to get like a semi-gaming laptop because Witcher is all... Right now.
No.
I'm like a year and a half or 2 years almost behind, or a year and a half behind that game, but I just started playing it a lot recently, and I just started playing that stupid card game Gwent.
Oh, yeah.
And now I'm backtracking to try to find every Gwent card, mm-hmm. and it's I'm such an idiot. but I am enjoying playing it a lot.
That's
so.
Okay. Pete goes away, you know, he does the other podcast, and he's not home a lot, so I'll take over the Galactic Empire then.
Yeah, you can play when I'm not home. That'll work out.
I can't wait.
You can
tomorrow.
Also just get a really nice laptop.
I don't want a laptop. If anything, I'd want to build my own PC like you did.
But... You would want to build it?
Well, I'd want you to build it
you
for
to
me.
Build it.
I will do that. That's probably a better thing to do anyway, because then I can always upgrade it.
Yeah.
A laptop, you can, but it's much more difficult than it's not something that I'm really
and
well
I'd rather
in.
Play like with that one. I'd like the, you know, mouse that's not the
You like an actual physical mouse.
Yeah.
Not using the, what we have right now. It's not great. We should get a wireless mouse.
We have one.
We should get a wireless mouse that works. The one that we have is not great.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a reason that I don't use it. in other news, now this isn't specifically a Disney film, just to give you a heads up as we go into this. But director Brenda Chapman, who you may remember, she was the co-director of Brave. To put it more bluntly, she was the one who was taken off of Brave during production. Now, she still was involved in the Oscar-winning thing because she was involved for X amount of time and, you know, certain DGA credits and all that kind of stuff, Directors Guild credits. But she is signed on to direct a live action. God knows you've heard that word a million times. But this is not being done by Disney. A live action film called Come Away, which is a fantasy film in where Peter Pan and Alice in Wonderland are siblings, and it's a prequel to both of those stories. So it happens, you know, previous to the stories that I guess we're familiar with, or maybe more specific to the novelization versions of those, not so much the animated films that were. And I thought this was just good timing because we just did Alice. We're talking about Peter Pan this week.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they were saying, like, since they're siblings, it's going to deal with, like, the death of their parents and how the death of their parents spurs them to travel, one to Wonderland, one to Neverland.
Yeah, that's weird. According to the article I'm reading off of Deadline, it says former Paramount production president Michelle Manning, Lisa Kahn, and Andrea Keir are producing. It doesn't tell me what the name of the production company is, though, and I've tried to find it in a couple of different spots. So, I don't know. I guess it's sort of a new company or whatnot. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Nope, that's not what
it is. Yeah, no, I looked on like three different sites and none of them had it.
Yeah, because Chapman is rep. I mean, they're all rep by different, different companies, basically. So I guess they're just coming together and making this film. Now, Chapman previously worked on Prince of Egypt, which actually I quite like. And she worked on, they call it animated staples, as Chicken Run. But then she also did work on Little Mermaid, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and story credits for Beauty and the Beast, Hunchback of Notre Dame. And she was a story supervisor on The Lion King. So she has a lot of strength behind her. I've always wanted to know what her version of Brave was. Because I have a feeling I was going to be more in line with that version.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been really interesting to know where the differences were. Just like with Ant-Man, we were talking about it, you know.
Yeah, and Ant-Man, it was they kind of watered it down, the visuals. Yeah. They watered down the visuals because they wanted it to look like all the other films. Talking about Marvel, Disney, whatnot, towards Edgar Wright directing that film. So that's a film that's going to be coming out. I don't know. I mean, we'll take a look at it when it comes around.
I mean, I know they've done odd stuff with Peter Pan in on Once Upon a Time, the ABC show.
They, though? Like, you know, again, Disney's not doing this.
No. But I'm just saying,
people like creators in general.
Yeah.
Okay.
I always go back to Once Upon a Time because they do really odd choices with the characters. And I remember Pan was somebody's father. I'm forgetting the
Rapunzel?
No.
Rumpelstiltskin?
Yeah, it was Rumpelstiltskin's father.
I knew it was
father.
Something with an R. I remember reading it, yeah.
Yeah, it was like Rumpelstiltskin's father who, I don't know, whatever, ran away to Neverland, became a boy. I don't know. It was weird.
Makes sense.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Well, that's exactly what Neverland does, though.
Yeah, I know, but I just never took Peter Pan as being someone's that father. Weird. Yeah, it really is.
The show's not great. Has a big following, but it's just not great.
The fact that he was evil, though, was kind of fun.
Well, he
kind
of is, though.
We'll get into it in the movie. He's not the nicest person.
And then the third news that we wanted to talk about was just a video that we all had watched, and that was a video of the Pirates of the Caribbean ride in Shanghai.
Yeah.
Which, number one, I don't know if I want to, I want to go to Shanghai, but I also now realize that I have to accept that everyone's going to have a camera out and snapping flash photography the whole way.
Yeah.
Part of me doesn't want to go.
I wonder how much of it is the culture versus it's new.
I think it's a culture,
at least from some people that I know that's been that's on our Magic Hour group too, because they live in that, in that part of the world, and they're working there, and they said it's like a cultural thing. So I don't know.
Yeah, because it looked maddening. You couldn't actually enjoy the attraction because you just got phones flashing in your eyes every 3 minutes.
Yeah, and then until somebody brought it up on the group again, I didn't realize that they were trashing the outside of Shanghai Disney.
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to get more of a definition of trashing because I've seen five photos and I get it. Some bushes were stepped on. There was a sign that was on the ground, and I saw a woman's letting her kid pee in the bushes.
Yeah. Well, there was also I saw graffiti, scratched into.
I saw one lamppost. Did you see anything else in that?
I saw a couple of other little things, nothing major. I mean, it wasn't like they were.
I think it was major enough, though, that it did make news because they did have to put more money into fixing it up where it was just kind of supposed to be, here is everything. And now it's now we have to go fix everything.
Well, that's the thing. Everything in some bushes and a couple of posts is not billions of dollars, though. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, yeah.
I really wish that we had someone who was physically there, not trying to play up hyperbole.
Of course, yeah.
And if you were looking for this, would you have noticed this, or was this a couple of isolated incidents? Because if I took somebody who'd never been to Food and Wine and threw them on Epcot on a Saturday with all the douchebags that filled that place up.
Oh, yeah, true.
They would say, Epcot is disgusting. There's these people walking around vaping and smoking cigarettes wherever they want. They're drunk. They're falling all over the place. And you'd be like, sounds like it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
So that's the thing.
The fact people were going to the bathroom outside.
But that's what I'm talking about. That was a picture that I found. That's the thing. Was there more than that, or was it that one woman who's an absolute imbecile with her child?
I don't know. Yeah.
So that's the thing. I saw a woman let her child urinate in Central Park while we were filming.
Yeah.
So that woman is insane. She really was absolutely insane. Because we tried to talk reason with her, and it was nutsville. So that's what I'm saying. Was that 100 people who did that, or one person?
Yeah.
And that's what we don't know.
Yeah.
Because to everything that I've read, that was a person. It was a photo. So, that is absolutely disgusting and ridiculous, and where's security?
Yeah.
But if that's only one person, I don't know, with millions of people that go in every day. I mean, we just had some schmuck on California, right? Take out a selfie stick in the middle of a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Despite all the signs and this and that. And you know what? That also falls, in my opinion, to security at Disney.
Yeah.
You got to start looking for these things.
Yeah,
more.
You got to do a better job of that.
And when you see somebody, take it out. I know that Disney has to be nice to everybody, but there has to be a line where it's you have to act like a grown up.
Yeah.
Like that woman, whoever she was, who let her kid, they should have immediately been kicked out.
Yeah.
And I'll guarantee you they weren't.
I don't know how it is in Disney. I know when going through the security lines at Walt Disney World, it can be very difficult because people do bring a lot. So, and then I know that there is, the impatience and nobody wants to wait online. So it does, there's a weird balance that you have to do because you have to go and you have to actually look into the bags to see about not only selfie sticks, but weapons or anything else.
Yeah.
But then you do have to
get them through.
So I feel like personally one who always waits on those lines. I do feel like they should start splitting up the lines into you have a purse, you have a backpack. Like, there should be two different lines, because then me standing behind five people with backpacks who are bringing in, you know, the world with them, it can be a little annoying, but...
You know people aren't going to follow that rule, though.
No, I know, but if you had, you know, maybe a little bit more, you're on this line because you have a big bag, the wait time is reasonably a little bit more, people have to search through your stuff versus getting these other people through with just a bag. I don't know. I want that. I know I that will never
where
happen. Came,
but... Where you're coming from, but all people would be like, it's, oh, I'm being judged, I'm being, you know, prejudiced against because I have a bigger bag because I have kids. Wah, wah, that's exactly what would happen. You know that too. But yeah, I don't know what they could do. I was talking, actually, I got to be honest, I wasn't even talking about it at the security stages. I meant in the park. Because we've seen people, we've seen people, they take out their selfie stick anyway, and there are cast members who see them and don't say anything.
Yeah.
It's like, well, look, if you're going to have rules, have rules.
Awesome.
Like, just because somebody got through the front gate doesn't all of a sudden allow them to do whatever they want.
Yeah,
like,
it's not free reign.
You
from
still
there.
Have to, like, enforce this stuff. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if anybody pulls out a selfie stick on a ride and I'm in the arm reach of it, it's all their phone and the selfie stick will be on the ground because I will throw it off the ride.
So, I mean, this happens everywhere. That's, you know, that's what I'm saying. So, I'm curious as to how crazy that damage really was at Shanghai and how that was just the internet got a hold of a couple of pictures.
Yeah.
Because, again, just throw somebody there on a weekend at Food and Wine.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we were there the last time and I like, didn't want to be in Epcot. All right, moving on from the news. Let's get away from that, because that seems like it was just bad stuff. Oh, you know what? We never actually spoke about pirates.
Oh, yeah.
All we did was talk about how Shanghai had, like, a dozen photos of people being slobs. So let's get back to actually what we were talking about, and then we'll go on to the film. So we saw a video. I think most people saw the same video with that guy losing his mind as everything was happening. That's also a thing I'm not sure if I would love, like, someone screaming in my ear, oh my God, it's amazing! Like, that was weird. But again, YouTube playing it up for the thing. So.
Yeah.
What'd you guys think of what you saw?
It was pretty crazy. I just remember, you know, at first I was like, oh, this looks nice. And then when...
Yeah, it kind of starts off a little slow,
right? It kind
of starts off
slow. And then I'm like, are we in Mexico? Because it's like the Mexican ride in the Mexico Pavilion. And then all of a sudden the skeleton's there and... It turns into Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I kind of like that. And then after that, it just went crazy.
It went bonkers.
It went bonkers is a good word, yeah.
Yeah, the animatronic looked amazing. Like, Davy Jones looked fabulous. Yeah. Like, I thought I was watching the movie. It was really crazy how they got, like, you know, his tentacles on his face and his arms. It was very fluid. It was crazy.
Yeah, I would love to see what it looks like in person. I'm sure it's even more impressive.
That's going to be the level, though, that we get with Pandora. Like, from what we saw of the Navi.
I still can't believe that thing was an animatronic. That little... I mean, granted, it was just like one eye that we saw. But
yeah,
that
and the
looked
mouth,
like
still,
an animated...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, of course, it could be. Like, you know how the Seven Dwarfs are. But that looked like it had a texture to it.
Yeah, it looked more. It didn't look like the Seven Dwarfs, like, where that's like... Ooh. Sorry,
it's okay.
Script the mic. It, you know, it's not a screen on a face.
It's not a projection.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the inside. Yeah, this, it looked like an actual physical thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was really interesting. But yeah, when the video first started, I said to Melissa, I was like, it's kind of tame. Like, this seems not a lot's going on.
Yeah, no.
And then, you know, the guy who was the video, he like loses his mind because he can see a restaurant. He was like, oh my God, it's so cool. It's like, dude, like, really? They have that in the Mexico Pavilion, and that thing is... Let's not act like that's the most incredible thing. So I don't know if he's never been to...
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, you know,
hopefully
maybe,
he's never been.
Or maybe it was
been.
Cool,
yeah.
Like, that you could eat in there? I don't know.
I guess, yeah. But it looked exactly like San Angel.
It really did. That's what I was
even
like.
Even the lighting, like, that really low lighting and everything looked exactly like San Angel. But then, yeah, when the ship basically goes upside down.
Yeah.
And they go into the...
Even that effect was really cool.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm referring to, is that, you know, that whole thing felt nuts.
It did. Like, I mean, it felt nuts, and we're watching it, like, on this guy's camera. I can only imagine how crazy that would feel actually sitting there.
Yeah, because the scale of it looked huge.
That's the
huge.
Thing. That's the
like,
thing.
I don't know what that space feels like, but it reminded me when we went on Gringotts...
Yeah.
And there was the scene where you see Bellatrix and Voldemort.
Mm-hmm.
that was like a huge scene, like visually. But that was one in that whole ride.
Right, right.
This attraction felt like it was that scale the whole way through once you went under, you know, upside down.
Once you went upside down, yeah.
Yeah.
It looked crazy.
It did.
I did not watch the Tron video, though. Did you, either of you watch that?
I didn't watch that. No. No, I didn't watch it either.
See, that one I feel like I'd rather just get on because...
Experience, yeah.
Yeah, that's a different one because the way the ride vehicle, the way you're mm-hmm. in it, the way it feels, the speed.
Yeah.
This I was just... With Pirates, I was more accepting of just like watching and being like, oh, this is what they're going for.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that one you don't have to worry if you're going fast or not. Like, I feel like with Tron, like, you have to feel it too.
Yeah, you got to get that feel of the speed going along with it, so... Very cool stuff. Made me very excited. Made me very excited about what we're going to see here because I know Shanghai got a park, but we got Pandora, Star Wars, Toy Story, Frozen Attraction, Soarin' update. Disney Springs is new. Like we have like
so
a park plus.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's Hollywood Studios coming. Is basically a new park.
Yeah, Hollywood Studios is, yeah, basically. And the overall, it's a new park.
It's a, yeah, it's going it's there's so much coming and it's, I don't know, it's going to be crazy. I can't wait to see Pandora now. After just all the stuff I've been seeing, that's the thing I'm really, really
and the amount that
to.
Joe Rohde has been in Animal Kingdom
exactly.
recently.
He was just there
like,
today.
Yeah, it's like really exciting because you know that he's things like are starting like, to
yep.
gel yeah. over there. And that's really, really exciting.
I want to walk on the floor.
You will. Soon. You'll, sweetie, we're going to be there like the opening weekend.
I know.
If not opening day. We'll probably be there opening
in
day.
In a month's time, we will be in Florida.
Yeah, permanent. Poignant. Tomorrow I hand in my 2 weeks notice, which is kind of weird. I hate that job. All right. Let's discuss what we originally were here for, and that is Peter Pan. This was released on February 5th, 1953. It clocks in at an hour and 16 minutes, or 17 minutes if you had a couple of seconds and whatnot. Had a $4 million budget. Brought in $40 million
wow.
on the release, which is huge.
That's crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I read 7. I don't know.
You had 7?
Yeah.
That seems very low.
That seems very low, yeah.
I have 87.4 million lifetime gross.
That I got, yeah.
And do you want to talk about the directors, Melissa? Because I know that you had them written down. We have very familiar names.
Yeah, we have Clyde, I always forget.
Geronimi.
There we go. Who did Peter Pan, Alice in Wonderland, Lady and the Tramp, Sleeping Beauty, 101 Dalmatians. Wilfred Jackson, who I thought was really cool because we've seen his work from Fantasia, Night on Bald Mountain, and Ave Maria. Those two sequences he was responsible for. And then Hamilton Lusk.
Yeah.
I thought this was really cool. He was a supervising animator on Snow White, but he also won a special Visual Effects Academy Award for Mary Poppins.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so he stays with the company quite a while.
Yeah.
All right, great. A couple of little trivia notes on this. Just found some interesting stuff. This was actually intended to be the second feature following Snow White. Yeah. But Walt couldn't get the rights till about 4 years later. And he actually got the rights from the Great Ormond Street Hospital in London, which at the beginning of the film, you see a personal thank you to
them.
Yeah,
you do. Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, so because that's who Barry, when he put in his will, he bequeathed the rights to the play to that hospital. Story development started in the late 30s and early 40s, and it was supposed to then be the fourth film after it wasn't the second one.
Yeah, we saw that in Pinocchio when Alice in Wonderland and Peter Pan were the books on the shelf right above Pinocchio.
Yeah, yeah. But then following that, World War II happens.
So everything gets
Pushed back, and that's how we wound up with the 53 mm-hmm. release date and everything getting so pushed back. Now, the character of Peter Pan actually originally debuted as an infant in an earlier book by J.M. Barrie called The Little White Bird. And that was in 1902. And the character got popular. And due to, you know, people's just reaction to that, that's what led to Barrie writing the 1904 play, Peter Pan, or The Boy Who Wouldn't Grow Up. It's not exactly how it is in Finding Neverland. Although that is a really great movie, actually. I think it's really, really good.
I also found that this was the last film that was distributed by RKO.
Yeah.
Because then after this, Disney came up with their own...
Buena Vista
Distributors or whatever it was called, production company.
Yeah.
And what the animated movies were released under after that.
And also this was the last film that the Nine Old Men worked together as directing animators.
Yep.
This is the last one. So things are starting to I wouldn't say turn, but just, you know, people are starting. They've been there for a while
now. Yeah, for a long time now.
You know, this is now like 20-ish, almost 20 years into the company. And these guys started, you know, when they were, you know, early, mid-20s and whatnot. So,
yeah, and actually I have a really cool quote from the 1940 during a story meeting. It was actually, they have the date May 20th.
Okay.
Of 1940, Walt said, "We ought to get right into the story itself, where Peter Pan comes into the house to get his shadow. That's where the story picks up. How Peter came to be is really another story." So you can kind of see Walt's like idea of tackling this entire thing and where he wanted to focus.
Yeah, because at first I had read originally they were going to do Peter Pan's backstory.
Yeah.
And then also one of the other starting points they wanted to do was filming it in Neverland.
Yeah.
And then he was going to come to kidnap Wendy.
Yeah.
To dark, be a mother yeah. for the Lost Boys. And he was like, no, it's a little dark.
There was a lot of dark tones that they
decided. There still is a lot of dark. I mean, they lightened it up, but overall, there's a lot of dark tones that are in this movie.
There's also an original version where Nana traveled with them to Neverland, which
and it was,
that would have been weird.
That would have been, yeah.
It's like too many. It's like too much.
Yeah, because you already got like the three kids plus Peter Pan and Tinkerbell to kind of tackle.
Yeah, it's kind of like a lot. In my opinion, if you were to say like what are the top five Disney, like just what are Disney songs, Second Star to the Right would be up there for me, right with When You Wish Upon a Star. I don't know why. I just think of it as like the anthem for Disney.
Yeah.
That was originally going to be an Alice in Wonderland. That melody was originally planned for Alice in Wonderland for a song that was going to be called Beyond the Laughing Sky. That was the original opening song for Alice in Wonderland. I actually had this in my notes last week, and I forgot to say it.
Oh, okay.
But it kind of worked out well.
Yeah, well, the guy who did the score, Oliver George Wallace, he did the score for a lot of the stuff, a lot of other movies, you know, Snow White, Dumbo, Pinocchio, Bambi, Alice, Ichabod, and Mr. Toad. So
Ichabod.
He's been there.
He's all over the place.
Yeah.
Another little couple of things for this was also Bobby Driscoll was the first male to play Peter Pan on film. Even though it's only a voice.
Yeah.
As a voice actor, he was the first male to play Peter Pan on film, always traditionally played by a girl.
Yep. Yeah.
I guess because of the hair. I don't know. I never really understood
why. I guess
because
he's kind of supposed to be small in size. So, you know, it'd be hard to get an adult male to be the size Peter Pan's supposed to be.
I guess back in the day, like, you really couldn't put, like, a young child as a star of a play, like, working as many hours because there wasn't, like, you know.
I will say, though, Peter Hogan's Pan... I want to just say, I think it's just called Pan.
The one with Hugh Jackman?
No.
Oh.
It's directed by Peter Hogan and the bad father from Harry Potter. What's Slytherin's? Jason Isaac is actually Hook in that film.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Maybe it's called Peter Pan. I take that back. You're right.
Pan was the one with
which was a bomb. But I believe his name is Peter Hogan. But that version is Jeremy Sumpter, I want to say the actor's name is. He's a young kid.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the best Peter Pan film. Like live action one, definitely. Maybe even including this one, actually.
Really?
Yeah, and that's not taking anything away from this film. I just really like the way that one is done. There's just something to it. Speaking, though, towards other things that we had, Tinkerbell.
Yeah.
Was also, they used, a live action model for this. Mm-hmm. And I had read a lot of people think that it's Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, I had read that also.
I never thought.
Because she's curvy
and blonde, I guess.
Which people were upset with. The purists of the book were upset that Tink was voluptuous.
Yeah.
And I will say that Tink is kind of sexual in this film.
She's
played off for sexuality.
Yeah.
But it was actually a 22-year-old actress named Margaret Kerry, who was actually the real... standard.
The model.
Yeah, there's some really cool pictures.
With the lock?
Yeah, they like did a wire lock so she could like look through it, but then they actually built like the piece of the drawer that has the lock in it, so it's like a huge like wooden block with the lock in it, and
I'll throw the picture on the webpage for the show, actually, because I was going to and I forgot to, and now you just reminded me, so I should definitely throw that in.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Towards the darker tones, just a couple of little notes here. Hook was going to be killed by the crocodile.
Yes.
Not run off and this and that. The Darling family was going to have a scene where they're mourning over their lost children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Han and the children were going to discover the pirate treasure, which is also like filled with bombs.
Yeah.
So there was just a lot more just drama.
Yeah.
Really, kind of like drama, but... this is a film where the villain doesn't get killed.
Yeah, no, he's kind of like, it's that ambiguous.
Up to this point,
like...
I mean, yeah, the stepmother from Cinderella lives.
Yeah.
But did they kill off everyone else?
Well, like, the evil queen, she falls off the cliff kind of thing.
Yeah,
so
but you know that she doesn't, like, yeah. Dead. Not in that world, anyway, yeah. I would imagine.
What would be the villain in Peter Pan? I mean, in Pinocchio.
Then. Monstro. Yeah, so he doesn't go. Stromboli doesn't get killed.
No.
So they're really not into the murdering of the villains yet.
No.
They really haven't started doing that yet. Actually.
No,
That's pretty interesting. I never really thought of that until just now. So, yeah, just a little bit. Anyone else have any little notes they wanted to throw in? Because that was just the trivia that I found for it.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, no, it's pretty much, you covered everything that I had also.
Continue with the cast a little bit.
If you want to, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because we know Bobby Driscoll from Song of the South. He was also in So Dear to My Heart.
Yep.
We get Catherine Beaumont back.
Just really quick, he's infinitely better in this role than he was acting on screen. Now, I know he's a little bit older at this point.
Yeah.
But he's a really effective voice actor in this film. Where, I mean, I think he's borderline awful in Song of the South.
Yeah,
like,
he's
like a bad kid actor.
Maybe it was because, like, the demands of being on camera versus just doing in voice.
I feel like it's almost, I always feel it's harder.
Yeah, I would think, yeah, but I mean, he's also older, so
yeah,
you know, just
it might just be that he just grew up. You know, he got a little better at it and whatnot, because Pan's a tough character to play. I don't think he's an easy character to play.
No.
Especially in this version.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, Catherine Beaumont.
Who is Alice? So we get her back. They also did a little live action reference for Wendy with her, the animators. We have Paul Collins as John Darling. I didn't find that he did much of note, like, for Disney after this. Tommy Lusk, whom I'm assuming is the director's son, was Michael Darling.
Oh, okay. Yeah, possibly. I'm not sure.
He doesn't have any more film credits.
Oh, like, this is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Hans Conried was George Darling and Captain Hook, which, as in the play, traditionally, the actor plays both, and they did the same here with the voice acting, which I thought was really nice.
Yeah, as soon as I heard him talk the first time, I'm like, that's Hook. Like, he's not even like trying to hide, like use a different voice. I'm like, he's Hook.
As soon as he like raises his voice in like temper, you're like, nope, that's
Hook. Yeah, I was 100%. Like, oh, same guy.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to just get into the film now? We kind of already touched a couple, but I mean, you want to get into the film? You got a little more.
I have a little more.
You got a little more. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, we have Heather Angel, who is Mary Darling, the mother, who was Alice's sister. We have our return of the Mellow Men, who were the pirate chorus and the Indians. They did the singing. And Tom Conway was the narrator, but I couldn't find anything else with him. And Bill Thompson from Mr. Smee, who was the Dodo from Alice. And he does like 5 dog voices in Lady and the Tramp that, you know, showed off his the accent, because he does like the Scottish Terrier and the Irish Bulldog, but then he also does the Italian.
Oh. Hey. I thought you were going to say he shows off his dog barking skills.
No, okay. Just all the accents. accents.
We're being joined by none other than Scott Bogad. That is not working. All right, so with Scott here, we just had to check out the mic. Mic wasn't working at first. Now it's working.
Yay.
So welcome.
Thank you. Welcome.
We did some news earlier, but we're just basically getting into the film itself. We talked about just some of the voice actors and whatnot in the cast and some of the history behind the film. So let's get into the film now. So we open up with Second Star to the Right.
The second star to the right shines in the night for you, to tell you that the dreams you had
again, kind of reiterating what I said before, I really think that if Disney had 2 flagship songs, it would be this and When You Wish Upon a Star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I liked how with the credits also we had, like they did with Alice, like sketches of the, you know, scenery and of the characters again.
And maybe again,
it goes through like the story.
And maybe again, this is because it's such a well-known thing, mm-hmm. there's nothing to hide.
Right.
So, I'm curious in other, you know, as we go further in, if that goes away.
If I think they stop for one of them it does.
Which
my
one?
Recollection. Sleeping Beauty. Yeah. I think it goes back to the just very colorful.
And yeah, and then we have the storybook opening, correct?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have another kind of concept-y art opening
yeah.
that gives you an overlay of the story before you even get into the story.
Yep.
And, you know, the opening line, all this has happened before and all this will happen again.
Yeah.
Isn't that close to also the line from Mary Poppins?
What? I don't know.
Winds from the east, Bellin' Blowing In, something's going to happen. Trying to begin. Oh, I got to look it up.
I don't know that.
All right, hold. You know what? Talk amongst yourselves. I'm going to. I got it. Winds in the east, mist coming in, like something's brewing about to begin. This is really the part of it, though. Can't put my finger on what lies in store, but I fear what's to happen all happened before.
Okay.
So it's kind of a sister line mm-hmm. to what opens Pan, which is all this has happened before and all this will happen again.
Yeah.
Which I think is something we can talk about at the end of the film with the father.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I think kind of leaves an interesting way to go. But we get introduced to John and Michael. I always have to remember John's the one with the glasses, Michael's the younger one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right? And we get introduced to Wendy. She pops in and they're playing pirate. And Wendy says something that I thought was really interesting because she says she reminds him that Hook lost his left hand, not the right.
Okay.
Okay. During the creating of the story and whatnot for Disney, they originally were going to have the right hand be the hook.
Oh, really?
And they reversed it, I think, just because of animation and the way action moved easier. So I thought it was interesting that they almost put in that, like, oh, no, not that one, the other one. Which was a change that they made during the making of the film. So,
yeah,
I thought it was interesting how they went through like each character and like their level of belief of Peter Pan. Like,
yeah.
I really like that. And then like they tell you like Wendy is like the ultimate, you know,
she's the go-to person.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Like if you have any questions, I guess about which hand was cut off, yeah, like she's the one to know.
Tonic. I want to talk about Tonic.
Well, yeah. I mean, these are my first notes that I had taken. Nursery scene. Father is an asshole. The babysitter is a dog, and they get drugged to fall asleep.
Yes.
No, I definitely feel like they get drunk to fall asleep. I actually kind of feel like the father is, he does overreact, but he is also really reasonable with that dog.
Yeah.
When they bring Nana out, like, he's 100% like, I'm really sorry about this. Like, he starts talking.
Yeah, he's reasonable to the dog.
He is, but...
But they also have a dog that works as their nanny, so I don't know. I don't know that CPS might need to be called on these people.
House of madness. They'll be fine.
The one thing I noticed in the opening scene, too, is they had a lot of play on the shadows.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was a big part of the opening scene.
Yeah, they were already kind of introducing that element of, mm-hmm. you know, shadows kicking, which also, it must have been a devil to keep up with animation-wise.
Yeah,
definitely.
It's a whole nother step you have to do the whole time. But I thought, I don't know, I hadn't seen this film for a while. I haven't sat down and watched it. We own the Blu-ray, but I know I bought it when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe I've watched it once or twice, as is the thing with almost everything I own. I watch it once or twice, except for a couple of films that I watch constantly. So I thought it comes off to a good start, though. Like, we're getting set up immediately. And unlike Alice, this film has a narrative thread.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely
where
does.
Where Alice was kind of more just a collection of scenes, this film, from the start, is like, these are our people. This is where we're going to be going. And it sets up a lot of blocks. No pun intended because of the dog thing. It sets up a lot of story blocks that then get paid off.
Yeah.
It definitely does.
You know, throughout the thing.
Yeah.
And that's something I noticed in the opening scene, and which kind of carries throughout. There's got like very like that Looney Tunes like vibe to this where there's constantly like things are getting knocked over, people are chasing each other and stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of like the physical comedy.
Yeah,
there's like a lot of physical comedy, and it starts like right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And it culminates later in the cave.
Yeah.
I would say in the water cave. Yeah.
I love the fact that the dog knows the alphabet. I took note of that. I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah. The dog's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dog's smart.
It's a girl. It's a girl.
It has to be.
It's Nana.
Nana.
And she's got a bonnet on. Yeah. It's a girl.
I don't know. It always strikes me as a boy-looking dog. I don't know why. The eyes.
It's kind of like a manly-looking dog, I guess.
I don't know, yeah.
Yeah.
So they go to sleep, and Wendy asks for the window to stay open. And the mother should immediately call the police. But
was a different time.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. Because she was genuinely worried when they were leaving the house.
But it's interesting because they do say, like, the mother also believed in Peter Pan. So, like, if it all happened before and it'll happen again, like, you could maybe think, like, maybe the mother had maybe an experience when she was younger. So.
But I think in the fable, in the history of that, you don't remember as you grow older.
Right, that's why. Mm-hmm. So maybe, like, she wasn't 100% against it because she obviously left the window open.
See, I'll say right now, I think the father was a lost boy at one point.
That would be cool.
I think he was a lost boy at one point and then came back.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then started his life because of his reaction to the ship at the end of the film. Yeah, like, to jump there. Look, this obviously, we don't, you know, spoilers, whatever. Spoilers. I don't know. I think that he was a lost. Like, I like the idea, actually, that he may have been a lost boy. I'm also really curious as to how long the lost boys have been lost boys.
Yeah.
That's,
must be a while. Yeah. They don't remember mother.
Because, like, it can get really dark when you think about it. Like, that is, what, 6 or 7 kids whose parents just think their children are dead.
Yeah.
Like, that's a dark. It is. It's dark, but that's pretty accurate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting. First iconic shot. Nominee, I would say, is when Peter Pan, in full shadow, ironically, as he's looking for a shadow, perches himself up on the chimney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very angular. He's a very angular-looking character in where the other children don't look like that.
No, they got, like, the round face. They're very... And Michael's so adorable.
Yes.
I found the treasure. Oh, my God.
He does.
So cute.
He's a thief. Yeah. He's the thief. But... What a creepy intro.
Oh my gosh. When Tink lights up his face, that's the creepiest part.
Like, that is not an endearing looking face at all.
No, it is. It reminded me of the creep video from Lonely Island. Like, they were up in the tree looking in the...
And they have that freeze frame in the new queue in Peter Pan and Walt Disney World where his face is lit up and he's got that really creepy grin on. And every time I see it, I'm like, that would terrify me if I was little.
It's very weird. He is a creepy character, but that is drawn very sinisterly.
Yeah.
It is.
That's one thing I noticed too, is like a couple of the shots, the animation on Peter Pan, it seems like it's different. The way that scene is shot, like his mouth and the, I guess it's more detailed, but it seems like it's almost a different style of his face.
Yeah, no, I can see what you're saying.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I think that, I guess they have so many animators working on it, you're going to see little differences. Alice is like that too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where in certain scenes, her face is very, very detailed. And then when it goes to different scenes, it's not as, and it's because it's two different artists.
Yeah.
So I guess, And with Pan... You do get a lot of facial animation. He's very, very facially heavy in the animation.
But I love, because this is one of the moments I noticed, and they bring it back in Sleeping Beauty that I know of. And I know it's him playing the pan flute, but like his music that, you know.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
It's like, you know he's coming, and like, that's great.
That's also, that, you know, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, those three notes are I don't know why, it's very Disney to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
That's another one of those sounds where I just instantly feel like I'm in Magic Kingdom.
Yes.
There's a lot of, from watching this, a lot of the music in this really reminds me of the Magic Kingdom. I never noticed that before, but there's quite a lot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you think of it, what is arguably the most popular attraction in Magic Kingdom?
Yes, Peter Pan
is got to be up there. I mean, I know Seven Dwarfs, obviously.
Well, I think in Fantasyland, like Peter Pan and Dwarves in Fantasyland.
Yeah,
like,
where Pan is, you know, one of the original things. Yeah. I mean, it shouldn't. I mean, I know that the loading goes into it with the fact that it doesn't take as many as quickly and all that, but it still is one of the most visited attractions there.
Yeah.
And the inside of that ride has not changed very much.
No.
The queue has.
Yeah, the queue overhaul.
The queue obviously
was
a huge. Yeah, and it's a phenomenal change. But the attraction itself, I mean, those are still the old animatronics, which. Yeah. I would kind of love to see updated animatronics in that attraction.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Because that would really be something. Because, you know, the black light is starting to kind of peel on the walls a little bit, I feel. So I would love to see an updated version. Not different. Just with new animatronics.
Updated,
You know, that's all. I wouldn't want them to change it because I think it's one of the best attractions.
Yeah.
We get introduced to Tinkerbell. She reminded me very much facially and physically of the female centaurs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Where she is played for sensuality.
Yeah.
I think that's this might be the only characters outside of them so far in Disney's history where that's like she's actually aware of her physical body too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Which I did think that was an interesting part where like it kind of also to me talked a little bit about the female body image issue, I guess you could say, because in most people's opinion, her body would be, you know, it was the perfect hourglass figure. But she notices that her hips are a little too
wide. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I just thought that was a really interesting kind of, I don't know, little detail that they put in.
Yeah. I wrote that down. Yeah. Tink has self-image issues.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, no, she has some personally. Obviously, she has abandonment issues and jealousy issues.
Big jealousy,
yeah, but that's
yeah.
kind of
and a murderer.
Yeah,
like, yeah, she is literally a murderer.
There's a lot of people in this there's film lots of- that are just they are they don't murder,
but they have an intent. Talk
about it. Yeah, they have intent to the, murder.
I put down that they talk about slitting throats an awful lot in this movie.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Much more than I thought they would.
Yeah. Yeah. So now we get a, you know, so Tinkerbell is introduced and this and that, and Wendy and Pete start talking. And this is like the first part where when we meet Pan, he comes off as a kind of a dick because he doesn't really care about anyone.
No.
No.
And he only starts caring because Wendy says no more stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's only when he cares. But he still doesn't even recognize like Tink is gone.
No, yeah. It's and just he wants his shadow and he wants his stories. He wants to hear the stories. He doesn't care
that's
if anybody
it.
Else hears
yeah.
them.
He's talking down to Wendy.
Yeah, woman.
I kind of wish that she didn't like him so much because it comes off very weird. But I guess it's a thing of the times and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like that story wouldn't play out like that now.
Oh, no.
Like
no.
Pan would be chasing Wendy.
Yeah.
Wendy would not be chasing Pan.
Yeah.
Like that's not how it would work. And then we kind of quickly go into You Can Fly.
But Peter, how do we get to Neverland?
Fly, of course.
Fly?
It's easy. You think of a wonderful thought.
Any happy little thoughts?
Uh-huh.
Like toys at Christmas, sleigh bells, snow?
Yep. Watch me now. Here I go. It's easier than pie.
He can fly.
He can fly.
Mm-hmm. You know, following that, you know, because he's like, all right, I guess I got to bring you along.
Yeah.
And I love how he was even like, why are they coming?
Yeah. Like,
to John
you.
And Michael.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't want them there.
Mm-hmm.
He just wanted the girl so she could tell stories. You know, again, not really a great person at all.
No, he's so very self-absorbed.
Which is supposed to be the character.
Yeah.
And that's great. You know, it's doing it correctly. And I got to give, you know, credit to Driscoll for really playing it well.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that he overhands it. I think that he actually really voices it smartly.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's got a certain knack to it.
Yeah, he does. It's not forced or anything. He's just, he just comes across as not a really, really nice person.
This is his norm.
Yeah, this is
his
norm.
You know, like,
yeah.
He isn't just becoming like this because one particular thing, like this is just how he is.
Yeah.
So I thought this was great. But you know, you go into You Can Fly and all of a sudden you want to be with Peter Pan. Like
come
that's
on,
it. We're okay now.
Here we go. Up to Neverland.
Think of a wonderful thought. Any merry little thought. Think of Christmas, think of snow.
I loved how every like when they were like think of happy thoughts and every one of the things that they thought of would be things that they encounter in Neverland.
And it's not what they wanted.
No.
I mean
yeah.
Wendy especially I'm
Lagoon,
sure doesn't want to visit the Mermaid
go very
Lagoon.
Well. The pirates.
Yeah, the pirates thing. And
the Indians.
Yeah. So they're all things that actively try to murder these children.
Yes.
In one night, which is also something I kind of forgot, is that this all takes place in one night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In a couple of hours, I would say, actually, because it's not like the darlings. Did I say darlings?
Yeah.
It is, right?
It is a darling.
It's not like they come home in the morning. They come home, it's still nighttime.
Yeah, it's the same night.
And they left when it was night, so...
I
is
mean,
this
maybe
film
they're
almost
gone from
in
like
real
7
time?
To midnight, maybe?
I guess, or...
How much time do you think we actually lose in between scenes? Because I don't think that we lose much.
Maybe when they go to Neverland, it's time stops, you know?
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, maybe time is different in Neverland.
That makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. That would actually make total sense. So we get the You Can Fly sequence. I would also, as I said with the opening song being the song that I think of with Disney, this sequence has got to be one of the top Disney scenes ever.
Yeah. Oh, definitely,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because then you get even like the, I would, for one of my iconic shots, the landing on Big Ben with the 100%. Tones, you know.
I put that well.
I love how they do that with the PhilharMagic and Donald makes the bong.
It's great. That sequence is my favorite sequence in
PhilharMagic.
Yeah, that is.
And I love how everyone's like, Tinkerbell. Like no one knows who she is. But you'll hear people yell it every time. You'll hear people say, like, Tinkerbell. I don't know why. She's one of those characters that whenever she shows up somewhere in the parks, people feel the need to say her name out loud. It's because like in that ride, no one's like, oh, Aladdin and Jasmine. Like, I know I never heard anyone say that out loud. But every time when I see Tinkerbell show up, you hear like kids' voices say Tinkerbell.
I think it's because of like that culture that came up like very recently with the whole fairies movies and stuff.
At first I was like, what movies are you talking about? I thought you were talking about, I didn't realize, I forgot all about the Tinkerbell films.
The straight to DVD stuff.
Yeah, those were a big hit actually.
Remember when they were expanding New Fantasyland? There was going to be a Pixie Hollow.
Yeah, that did not come to. I don't know if that, in a long term, I don't know if that would have been a great idea.
No, it's probably a good thing they didn't.
Because those films did really well when they were out, but I mean, how many times do you have them referenced now?
Yeah, no.
Not that a film has to be referenced forever, you know, to be successful, Splash Mountain. So, you know, I just don't know. That seemed like it was going to be a big footprint for something that had a time on it.
I can tell you all the princesses. I can't tell you all the pixies, all the fairies that were in that, show.
Maybe it's because you don't have any girls. Like, maybe if you had a daughter, you might know.
I don't have any girls, and I can tell you all the princesses.
Well, you're a princess. I love you, man.
So we go really from one song right into a next.
Yeah.
We go right into the Pirate's Life song, which is fun.
I like that, yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And this is kind of proto Pirates of the Caribbean song.
Yes. It is. No, really. Definitely. As soon as I heard it, I guess.
It seemed like someone took it and they just tweaked it. They're like, we can do some things here and there, and you know, we've got a whole new song. Congratulations.
Maybe we should not mention the splitting the throat so much.
We'll just bring in women for sale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the
first time, too, that I realized, like, they're talking about, like, they don't want to sit here anymore. They want to get out and, you know, sack and pillage and... But where?
That was my question. Is like, where? Are you going to go? In Neverland?
No. Outside of Neverland.
So they would leave Neverland.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because later on, that's what when
yeah, but,
Shmi's singing. I think Neverland is just like
a state of mind,
bro. State of mind, yo.
Like how mind does one? Blown. How does Captain Hook leave Neverland?
Maybe
because he doesn't
just
leave
like
the way they do at the end.
Island
because that was
of Neverland, like. But, like, that island is one part of it. There's other parts.
All right. It's a possibility. I don't think
maybe
so.
Maybe it's an archipelago?
I don't think so.
It's an archipelago.
Okay.
It's Tortuga. It's like, you know,
yeah,
it's that's like Neverland is like Tortuga, and then there's other places. I don't know. But they want to go pillage. I know that.
Yeah, they do. They want to find other ships and, like, overtake. And I'm like, where? Where are these other? I would have loved to have. I guess those are in the sequel, actually.
Yeah, maybe.
Something. I think Smee and Captain Hook are two of the perfect. They are really. I mean, Smee is kind of. He's the mold for what LeFou would be.
Yes,
definitely.
Later.
Yeah.
But I think Hook may be the. I think Hook is the best developed villain they've ever had.
So far, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'm talking about even later. I think developed wise, he has the most screen time. He has as much screen time, if not more, of Peter Pan.
I think if we run through it, I think he might have more screen time than Peter Pan.
Yeah, he's got, you know, everything about him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I kind of feel for him.
Yeah.
Because I think Peter Pan is a massive pain in the ass.
Yeah. I mean, he lost his hand because of Peter Pan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he could have been trying to, I mean, Hook is still a pirate. I mean,
but he's a pirate, so it's all right.
That's also, I just, I. I think of, like, there's an actual sequence in which that crocodile literally eats his hand.
Yeah. And it's funny because they have this, like, that whole thing with, like, you know, he lost his hand and the crocodile ate it. And that's, like, kind of like a serious thing. But yeah, the crocodile is not serious at all. Like, when you meet the croc, he's awesome.
I just love that the crocodile now has, like, a taste for him, and that's why he keeps following
exactly.
him.
Exactly.
Like, he liked the taste of his hand.
Yeah.
Weird.
After we meet Smee and Hook, we do hear the word Redskins, which is something.
We forgot, like, Hook's kind of introduction, which I thought was one of the best things. Where he shoots the guy who's singing.
Oh, no, that was next.
Yes, I have it here. Okay. Yeah.
That's after the Redskins quote.
I had first murder.
Yeah. I was like, he just totally killed that guy.
He kills somebody.
He does.
He doesn't try and fail, or the guy, you hear him swing away. Like, he literally shoots a man in the face.
Yeah, and even before that, he was, you can tell he's bad. He's smoking two cigars at once.
He's got a twin cigar smoker.
He's dual-wielding cigars.
I put Captain Hook as legit. He's smoking two cigars at once. Like, he's gangster. A bad guy. He's just, if that would have, damn, it feels good to be a gangster.
Yeah, that would have been good.
That would have been
all right.
Yeah.
I love the tick animation on Hook and Smee as the crocodile arrives. This movie's really well thought out. Like, there are things that just make sense from A through the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, definitely.
But all of this, as I was saying before, I think Hook is just incredibly well represented. Scott, isn't he, like, your favorite villain?
He's in the top three.
He is, right?
Yeah, okay. I have, it's him, Scar, and then Hades.
Is that on your arm?
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's why. Okay, that's why I was thinking of it.
Yeah, I didn't want to put Peter Pan on the other side, but I kind of had to go with the whole...
I'm referring to Scott has a Disney tattoo, and one of the characters on his arm is Captain Hook.
Yeah, he's a bad man.
He's a bad man. they see Peter and Wendy in the sky and this and that, and they're told to follow Tink. And Tink literally... makes an active effort to get Wendy murdered.
Yeah.
Yep.
She tells the Lost Boys to kill her.
Like, she's not kidding either. Like, the thing that's really important, like, there's a lot of, sometimes in these films, you know, you'll get a lot of, like, oh, I'm going to playfully kill you. Like, stuff like that. Like, killing somebody is almost done with, they're not going to really die from this. I'm just going to drop a piano on them and they're going to be fine. You know, like a Warner Brothers cartoon.
Yeah, yeah.
In this one, she's like, they're literally trying to murder people in this film.
She's malicious.
She's incredibly malicious, which is kind of okay with the history of fairies. They're not really supposed to be the nicest things on earth. I mean, what did we just watch? Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. You know, we learn of someone from fairy.
Yeah.
And they are the villain
of
the entire thing. And
especially in British mythology, like,
yeah, they're not yeehaw pretty happy things. They're malicious. They are, you know, of evil intent. So she tries to kill him and gets herself banished.
I love, though, how she, like, totally owns up to it.
Oh, yeah, she's proud of it.
She's like, I did it, and I know that was the result, and
okay, this is my question.
Well, because she sends the Lost Boys to murder.
Yeah.
To go murder.
She also says Peter Pan wants you to do this.
Yeah.
So she gets down there, and she's like, you know, go murder that girl.
So my question now is, because it comes up again later, has she actually pulled this off before in the past?
I wouldn't doubt it.
I feel like she has.
Yeah, I feel like it wouldn't be out of the question.
The Wendy's not the first girl that Peter Pan's ever brought to Neverland. Not this Peter Pan. Not a chance.
He's just too weird.
Yes.
I
guess that's why there's only Lost Boys instead of Lost Children.
There's not a single Lost Girl. I actually really was wondering that. I guarantee you the mermaids have murdered people.
Oh, 100%.
Because they were going to drown her, and they say it again, like, with this carte blanche, like, we're just going to drown her.
Yeah, nothing bad.
So, there has to be a time when no one stopped them.
Yeah.
You know, like, it had to.
Well, there was also, like, that mythology of mermaids, that mermaids were very, like they look more like sea serpents, like with, like, razor teeth and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
That they weren't just,
Well, I mean, I guess the way they're portrayed in Stranger Tides, Pirates of the Caribbean.
In Harry Potter, the mermaids are not pretty mermaids.
Oh, that's a good point.
Oh,
yeah,
maybe that's what I'm thinking of too.
That is what I'm thinking of, actually. Because they do feminize them a little more in Pirates, but one of them, like... No, they do. They also make them murderers in that.
Yeah,
one
yeah,
of them
no, they try
murderer.
To drown, yeah.
Yeah.
In that scene when you first meet the Lost Boys, I immediately thought of
Kiefer Sutherland.
No.
Vampires.
No, of the Song of the South. What the heck is that? I can't think of the name.
Oh,
of the
movie. Brer Rabbit. Yeah,
Brer Bear and okay, Brer yeah. Fox. Because Brer Bear was just the hey, you are.
Oh yeah, he was the
yeah.
Big,
yeah,
the
they have a Brer costume, Fox yeah. was kind of you know the guy who had the fox costume was kind of like hey what do you know he was like kind of like the leader of the Lost Boys but not really.
Yeah no, yeah. I know. Yeah, yeah, I would agree. I would agree. They're kind of they're similar in tone and in in intelligence, they're very similar.
Yeah, yeah
definitely.
But dumb. That's really the word yep. I'm looking for. Yeah.
Wonderful little connection. The redheaded mermaid that was like, we're just trying to drown her.
Yeah.
She was voiced by the woman who did the modeling for Tink.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's very, very cool.
She's just a murderous woman, apparently.
Yeah, so we learned that the Indians and the Lost Boys have kind of been going at this for a while. And the chief is going to, again, murder these children.
I like how they played out.
Well, at least he has a reason this John's, time.
Plan. They're like, we'll surround them. And then, da, da, da. And yeah. like, that's what the Indians were doing to them.
Yeah, well, yeah, because, I'm sorry, we get the song Follow the Leader.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
After the banishing of Tick, of Tink. I have Tick on here because they walk through wheats and all I could think of was be wary of ticks. So
that's,
I wrote that down.
That scene to me felt very Jungle Book. Jungle Book-ish. Is what I was gonna say. I don't know why they have they go under the waterfall and they skip on the rocks and then they go through the part you were saying, the savannah, and then they see the bear.
Yeah.
It felt they very just see the bear. Yeah. They felt very I don't know why. Okay. It felt very Jungle Bookish.
Okay.
Not Jungle Bush.
Not Jungle Bushes. That's good.
Stay away from those.
So we meet the chief and we meet the Indians. I'm sure in 1900, there was a 1001 Cowboys and Indians films, and if I remember correctly, Natalie Wood once played a cowgirl, an Indian, a Native American. Natalie Wood.
Yeah.
So, look, this was literally the Wild West of stupid when it came to how to maybe not be incredibly off color with the handling of Native Americans in film.
They were very color. They were red.
They were red.
Yes.
So without going into it, I think we can just say like it's a product of its time.
Yeah.
At the time when this was out, this was absolutely par for the course. Mm-hmm. No one probably raised an eyebrow at all to any of this, but it is bonkers cuckoo bananas.
Especially later when they have a song dedicated to to it.
Yes. Yeah.
I couldn't believe
such a weird song.
I couldn't believe how different the animation was. You know, like their faces were like almost not human compared to the other.
Except
you know,
for Tiger Lily.
Yeah.
Yes. She was pretty.
Because you're supposed to like her like a little more. You know, she's supposed to be almost a foil for Pan.
Yeah. And the other ones are savages. They're supposed to be like.
Oh, God. Yeah, they are. Savage. It's bad.
Yeah, it's bad.
it's pretty bad. So we have that whole little thing and we go to the Mermaid Lagoon. Actually, did we have the cave sequence in between?
No, the Mermaid Lagoon comes first.
Later because...
That comes right after that.
They're at the Mermaid.
Oh, yes,
and then
yes.
the sky gets dark and Hook is coming.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because they see Pan and Wendy see Hook going by with Tiger Lily on the boat.
Yeah.
Gotcha, yes.
Yeah, because it was like as Hook was coming with the boat, like the clouds were rolling in.
Yes. So let's go to the Mermaid Lagoon. We kind of hinted on it before and all that. But Pan, he abandons Wendy again.
Yeah.
He does that to her, like, pretty repeatedly in the film.
He doesn't seem to think them trying to drown Wendy is really a big deal. He's like, oh, they're just playing. But he's not saying it in, like, a funny way. He's kind
of
just...
So, again, the bottom of that ocean filled with dead bodies.
I'm sure.
Dead Wendy's.
Got it. Yeah.
It's littered with the corpses of
dead Wendy's.
Girls.
Sounds like a hard crime film.
Yes, it does.
Dead Wendy's.
Well, that scene also, I really noticed. I mean, it's been evident with, you know, Tink's obsession with Peter Pan and Wendy's. But, like, he's got some kind of, like, love trench or something. Like,
yeah, because everyone's all
women.
Over him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's just like...
Because even Tiger Lily.
Yeah. Tiger Lily,
everyone loves
yeah.
Peter.
Why?
I don't know.
Because he's, like the, only, he's
he
the only.
Because he makes
boy.
Them feel like they're not wanted, and they want him more. It's the way it works.
Oh, is that like the 40-year-old virgin?
That's it.
Is that what it is?
Don't put it on the pedestal.
Maybe it's those three little notes.
Maybe it's those three little notes.
Okay.
Okay. See, just got to repeat.
Yeah,
just got to repeat like a question back. That's the method. So I made an observation then during this whole mermaid thing. Catherine Beaumont in two films is just surrounded by the biggest group of assholes.
Yep.
I mean, everyone in Wonderland is a miserable maniac who just does not care about her. And nothing changes in this film. Like, she goes to another magical land, and it's just filled with the worst people on Earth. Again, bringing in that Walt Disney motto, don't leave home.
Yeah. Yep.
This is really weird.
Yeah.
For a man who did so much and went so many... Did he go so many places?
Well, the family moved around.
He did some traveling, but I'm talking about like outside. I mean, outside of, you know, the trip, you know, the grupo and all that. Anyways, for a man who was so outgoing, seen that way, and did so much towards like adventure and this and that, a lot of the films produced under him have the underlying message of the world is filled with insane people, and you're never going to be as comfortable as you are in your home.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's what he discovered on his travels. Like, he had to go, but he didn't want to.
And then now... he was like, I'm just going to build a place that sort of looks like these places, so I never have to go there again.
There you go.
Yeah. That's how come I have no problem walking around Epcot. I don't have to go anywhere else. Just travel there and visit him.
Common American fool.
Yeah, it's all right. I'm fine with it.
So, that's the thing. And we go back to the croc and Hook and all that kind of stuff. The croc breaks the fourth wall. Which I thought was interesting. He looks directly into the camera.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He does it on a couple occasions.
He does. Yeah. Even Hook does that once, I believe. He looks right into the camera.
Yep.
Which I'm fine with. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
You know, the movie's got enough going on in it, but I thought it was just like, I don't know, something I hadn't noticed. I mean, obviously, Jiminy Cricket is someone that is addressing us, like, personally the whole time.
Yeah.
But that isn't a common occurrence through a character in this film, but it still happens, like, once or twice.
Yeah.
So, now do we get to the cave? Is that
where we're at?
So now we're into
Skull Rock.
Yeah, so
literally a rock. That
Hook
shape
has
a
Tiger Lily.
Yeah, gonna drown her.
Pan is he's gonna drown her because
of course.
What else? Oh, he's just gonna let the tide drown her
indirectly,
which is even worse,
like Creepshow.
Yeah,
Leslie Nielsen and Ted Danson. I can hold my breath for a long time. Yeah,
I mean, it would have been bad enough to like take her head and drown her. He's like, nope, the tide's gonna come and. You're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Pan goes and fights Hook. Hook has him dead to rights on two occasions.
Yeah, Smee screws it up twice.
Smee and Wendy.
No.
Yeah, oh, Wendy. Yeah, Wendy the one time. That's right.
If not for Wendy and Smee, he would have driven the hook through his head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And pulled it up like, here's my
I want to see that deleted scene.
Yeah.
That's in there somewhere, right?
Yeah.
So this is where I kind of started feeling for Hook. I don't know why. I just... Pan is just, he's a cocky, arrogant, aggravating.
Yeah. That's exactly what I wrote down.
He's like a gnat. You just want to swat him.
Yep.
Yeah. He's not like a hero in this.
No.
You know, he's
and
not.
And even like the times where he's kind of.
Even at the end.
Put
like,
in that role. Well, even in this one, like he's going to, his whole purpose was to go and save Tiger Lily. Kind of forgets about that.
He leaves Tiger Lily. Yeah.
When she literally like, almost drowns.
Yeah.
If it was not for Wendy, he would have left Tiger Lily to die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he had his fun with Hook, and he won that fight, and that was all that mattered.
Yep.
Yeah. And then he was just leaving.
I do like the whole, you know, when he's talking into his hat as Captain Hook.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that was good.
Watch this.
Mistress Smee.
Yes, Captain?
Release the princess and take her back to her people.
Aye, sir. Release the princess. But Captain...
Those are me orders, Mr. Smee.
Aye, aye, sir.
See, my iconic shot candidate is also when he's fighting him on the rock and he pulls his hat all the way down. I don't know why that scene, I just remember it like every time.
Just sticks in your crull.
Yeah.
I love when they're walking and there's no rock under them anymore. And then Hook realizes there's no
great.
Floor
Hook
under
realizes.
Yeah, again, like very Warner Brothers-esque.
That scene, too, with the croc when he's constantly going in his mouth and then he's, you know, prying it open. And then he runs into the, you know, Smee gets him on the boat. And apparently Smee is like a world champion rower.
Yeah
he is. He's not good at much else. He can row.
Later on, at near the end, when Hook gets thrown into the crocodile's mouth again, when he gets to the end of the crocodile, he hits a piano. Yeah. It's a piano noise. So I'm like, son of a bitch, he had a piano?
Well, maybe. He wouldn't start up on an alarm clock.
It made me think of Jaws when they cut the belly open and, you know, Richard Dreyfuss throws a license plate at Roy Scheider. He's like, he didn't need a car, did he? He's like, no, he just eats junk. So, yeah, Pan's a Jackass. I put that down here. Great slapstick with Captain Hook and the crocodile in this whole sequence. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, Melissa, as you said, I wrote down, Peter would have left Tiger Lily to drown, if not for Wendy. And then he forgets Wendy, too.
Yeah.
So, he goes back, saves Tiger Lily, well, just gets Tiger Lily, and then goes off with Tiger Lily, and then leaves Wendy on the rock.
And then she's like, wait up!
Yeah. Oh, my God. She should have left.
She leaves her every time. All the time.
What do we got going on next? Chief?
Oh, then we have Hook kind of plotting. Hook
caught a cold somehow from...
Yeah. Being well, in the water.
Was probably cold.
Was, yeah, he was dunked in the water repeatedly.
I guess
stuff.
So.
He was swallowed by a crocodile.
Yeah,
that is
true, I guess. Well, that's...
And they come up with their plan. Yes.
Yeah, and like, I noticed a lot of times when he was plotting Hill.
I'm sorry, what?
A lot of times when he was plotting here, they did close-ups on his eyes and they were green.
Yes. Yeah, I wrote that down, actually. Yeah.
I couldn't remember in the beginning if they were, but I noticed it here.
I only noticed it, actually, in the close-ups when he's speaking to Tink later.
Yeah.
That's when I noticed the green eyes.
Even here, like when he was plotting on to get Tink.
Oh, okay.
He had it, but yeah.
We kind of cut to the Indians now with Tiger Lily brought back home, safe and sound. And this is, okay, it's a terrible song. Yeah, what made the red man red?
Why does he ask you how?
Why does he ask you how? The engine didn't know all the things that he know now, but the engine, he sure learned a lot, and it's all from asking how.
Yeah. Is not great. I also, what I was really impressed by, Chief is using exclusively hand signals in the beginning of the scene, and then just starts talking.
Yeah,
it's like, dude, just pick one.
In the middle of that song, he should be in a dance off because he has the best dance moves.
Yeah,
he has
that like Irish step dancing that he does, and I was like, big guys can move, yeah.
Yeah. He's got his arms crossed, and
he's just going to town.
I really thought the animation on Tiger Lily dancing was phenomenal.
Yeah, it
just looked like a young girl, like, dancing.
Yeah.
It was so fluid. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, she likes Pan. I don't get it.
Eskimo kisses.
Yeah.
This dude just left you to die, like, moments ago.
But he did save you.
And then, and Wendy's getting annoyed... The one that he left also is getting annoyed that he's...
Yeah.
Yeah, he's ignoring her.
He's ignoring her for Tiger Lily.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I mean...
He's just got some... Guy's got charisma.
I don't know. But now she's starting to understand why Tinkerbell got so upset also. I thought that's kind of interesting. We cut back to Smee and Tinkerbell now, and who just got kidnapped by Smee, which... I love it. Smee can barely walk straight without falling, but he was able to kidnap Tinkerbell.
Well, he didn't kidnap her. He, was like, we have a plan for you.
No, he didn't.
No, he grabbed her in the hat.
Yeah, and she was struggling to get out.
Yeah, yeah, she was sitting watching the boat from afar, listening to all the Peter Pan stuff. Like,
listening to the dance, the song.
Not the boat. She was across from the Indian reservation point. Yeah. And Smee just sneaks up from behind her and throws her into a sack.
I blacked out a little bit.
Whoops.
Yeah. Now we get Drunk Smee.
Oh, yeah.
Classic.
Love Drunk Smee.
Classic. Drunk Smee.
He's really good.
Yeah, he is. I want to hang out with Drunk Smee.
What stuck out to me most in this scene was Tink tells them the way to the hideout, but the hideout is just the massive tree that's on the map.
Yeah, there was no need for all these steps and everything.
There's no 40 paces. Just go to the tree.
Well, maybe if you don't go in that order, there's traps.
I don't believe that for a single moment. But yeah, he was like, wah, woman, wah! And it's like, oh, it's just a tree.
I love how she dipped her feet in the ink, though. And it's like,
yeah, that was a cool little part. That was a really nice, addition for someone to actually think of that. We cut back now to the boys and the Lost Boys, and we get Your Mother and Mine, which I feel like this song has come up on a previous episode. What was that? Moments That Make You Cry? Was that one of yours?
Yeah, Songs That Make You Cry.
Your mother and mine.
So yes, this is it's actually sung by Catherine Beaumont too, mm-hmm. which I thought was really interesting because she sings her part obviously in Alice in Wonderland, and her voice cracks and whatnot. And they liked her voice because it was untrained.
Right.
This sounds a little more trained.
Maybe she got training.
And that's what I'm saying. You know, the time in between, it was, what, 2 years? Yeah. Mm-hmm. 51 to 53. And she obviously grew up a little bit, too.
Yeah.
And her voice sounds more mature, but it also sounds stronger.
Yeah.
So I thought that was very interesting because, yeah, I guess she actively went, you know, to pursue, like, I'm going to take care of my voice a little more.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
I love it. She makes everybody cry. The pirates are tearing up. The little boys are sad. Michael wants to go back home.
Yeah, this is the turning point for the kids, basically. Yeah. This is where the kids realize that they want to... Well, I should say for Michael and John, because when they do go home, the lost boys decide not to go home. Because
it's still fun to be with Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Of course.
Weird.
Yeah.
That was an interesting thing. I was like, oh, so they didn't learn anything.
It's very cult-like behavior.
They want to still kill young women.
Yeah.
Well, who doesn't? Who doesn't? I will argue that. They did change the method of trying to kill Pan from the book to the movie. In the book, Hook poisons his medicine.
Yes, yeah.
And then Tink drinks it, you know, like jumping in front of him drinking it. And that's the way that she, like, falls and almost dies. Mm-hmm. In this, it's just, you know, a bomb is much more violent. So we're
and it kills everybody.
I'm sorry?
And it'll kill everybody.
It'll kill everyone, yeah. What was that?
I was like, acme bomb.
Yeah, it pretty much was like an acme bomb. So Hook tries to murder Pan, like really murder. Like he's going for it this time.
And the best part is before when he's lowering the present down, Smee goes to him, it'd be much better to just slit his throat. Like that's what Smee says to him. But he's like, no, this'll work better.
But he kept his word. He was keeping his word. He wasn't supposed to lay a hand or a hook on him.
Exactly.
Oh, that's good point,
true, yeah.
Could let Smee do it. It seemed like he would have been fine with it.
Or a knife is really not laying a hand
on it.
It's
what I was just going to say. Now we get into semantics because he had a lure with his hand. Let's just, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
How far are we going with this rule?
I don't know.
We have no rules.
The rules are, there are none.
So Pan and Tink, surprised they survived. But, you know, there's no clap your hands, you know, moment or anything. Again, which is very, very popular in the play and whatnot to revive Tink. She kind of just revives off screen because he gets buried under the rubble. And the next that we see them, they're flying up the side of the pirate ship.
Right.
Yep.
I don't know why. I felt like it was a... I don't think it was done as dramatically well as it could have, actually, their reintroduction.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah, well, it was kind of like...
They just sort of like showed up again.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. There was really no explanation. Just she's just there.
They don't show him like escaping or anything, which is, I guess you can say like, oh, that's plain because you don't know if he escaped. And then it's like, oh, no, he's here. But I don't know. It didn't hit me as well as I would have hoped. It would, but
they were going for a ta-da moment, but there wasn't.
Yeah, it felt like there should have been a ta-da moment, but there wasn't a ta-da moment. Yeah.
Ta-da.
And we have the battleship now. The battle at the ship, sorry.
Battleship.
You sunk my battleship.
You sunk my battleship. And I like this whole thing. I think it's really good. I actually think that it seems like it's a good fight. Like there's a lot going on.
There's like nice choreographed, like fighting. It was good.
I thought it was a well thought out scene.
Wendy still believes in Peter. Like like he's left her millions of times, she's like, no, it's okay. I can walk the plank. He'll totally show up.
Exactly. Like he'll show up to save me. He's like, he's left you every other time before, and he's going to show up now?
There's no pattern that would make you think that he will be there.
I'm telling you, it's the bad boy complex.
I guess.
She's
I don't know.
Waiting for that one chance where he actually saves her.
She'll grow up one of these days.
Oh, yeah.
Evidently. Good guys win. Surprise, surprise. Hook hysterically gets chased by the crocodile.
Crocodile, yeah.
Seemingly forever.
Into the sunset.
Yeah, into the sunset, which, I don't know. What happens? Do you just, like, fall off the end of the earth when you get to the end of Neverland? These things I don't know. And then Tink magically, you know, she like lights up the whole ship, makes, you know, golden music cues in, and they're off to London, which is the only nice thing that he does.
He brings them home.
Yeah. Everything else was kind of like for his own good. Well, I guess he didn't really have to go back and save them from Hook. So that's one thing. But that also included like him being able to beat Hook.
Yeah. But
it was the Lost Boys.
Did he really like do it?
Yeah.
You know, or did Tink like, you know, persuade him to do it?
We don't know. It's all
that's what I'm saying. I think Tink persuaded him. He's been fine.
And Wendy decides that she, you know, she is ready to grow up, but then the parents are like, no, don't worry about it.
Nah, we made a mistake.
And it's a little weird.
Yeah,
a little bit of a weird finish.
Isn't it just weird in general that, like, I don't know, mildly almost adolescent girl is still living in the same room with her two brothers.
Well, that's the whole point. That's, you know, that's what the father is saying in the beginning. Like, she has to grow up now. She's just, she's not one of the babies anymore.
I'm sorry, but when that back in the first scene where the father says, "That's it, you're going to get your own room," I wrote down "own room equals death sentence," because every single person in that room was like, "Oh, he can't be serious." It's like, you're like 13. You shouldn't be sleeping in the room with two brothers.
You're the only girl. You should probably have had your own room by now.
Even the dog was like, "Oh, you can't be serious." It's like, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a room.
Yeah. And no, apparently they had a spare room the whole time.
It's not like you're never going to see anyone again. Like, you're just going to go to sleep in a different room.
That's it. She's like on death row now because she's got to go in her own bed.
Yeah. It's weird.
Crazy.
But then, yeah, we have the really nice reaction of the father, George, looking at the ship. And I was like, I think this guy was the lost boy.
George.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah. Kind of like the way that wraps it up. Okay. So that's our film. I mean, that is pretty much the overall arc. It's a fast-moving flick. I don't think that it wastes any time.
No, not at all.
There's no scenes that fill. There's no scenes that act like filler. Yeah, and even if they are, they're well masked, and, you know, it's paced well.
Yeah, the pace is always going.
Yeah, it's always moving forward. There's a narrative that's, you know, succeeds in the end. When I guess really the overall arc of the story is that Wendy has to grow up, and the boys have to learn that they're going to have to grow up eventually. And I think they do. While enjoying their childhood at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, it's they learn to kind of, like, treasure that time because it is so limited.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Pan maybe learns a little bit of a lesson, but I don't think he's willing to accept it yet.
Yeah.
So, funny enough, I feel like this was a film that left it where you could have made additional films.
Yeah, they did do one, Returning to Neverland. Yeah,
I heard it wasn't that great. I've never actually seen it.
Straight to DVDs. I didn't see it either.
Yeah, so, but, you know, I think this is one of the ones that actually kind of lend itself to that idea.
Yeah.
So, but let's get into our three questions. Okay. Shall we?
Yes.
Melissa?
Yes.
What's question number one? You want to do morals first or message? You want to do that?
Okay, is it a morals film or an emotional film?
Yeah, so is this film aiming to give you a moral? Or is it aiming to elicit an emotional response from you? Or is it both? Or is it neither? And does it succeed? I guess is also kind of important. Scott, what do you think? Does this have a moral, or is this just aiming to get an emotional response from you?
I think it's more of a moral, kind of going on what you were saying before, is, you know, it's the dreamland that you have in your head should stay in your head. You know, because when you actually go out and explore, there's danger. There's always something that's going to come up, and you may not be ready to handle that. So,
Brian, what do you think?
I think it's a mix of both. I think it's emotional from the standpoint that, you know, you enjoy your childhood, like just the, you know, that childlike wonderment that people have. And then the moral is like, yeah, like, you know, you eventually have to grow up. You know, it's you can't hold on to childish things forever.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the moral. Like, you do have to grow up. So treasure, you know, your time with your siblings, treasure your time with your friends when you're young and you're kind of carefree. But yeah, it's gonna, adulthood's coming for you.
And don't fall for the bad boy.
Yeah, because that'll never end well.
He'll just leave you to die a lot.
I agree. I think the moral is, you know, it has to do with the whole, you know, you do have to grow up eventually. Like, that's just a part of being a person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is accepting that, you know, you have to grow up. But there's no reason that you can't enjoy your childhood.
Yeah, there's no reason you can't have stories and stuff like that.
And even if you get older, you don't have to lose that childlike interest the way their father does.
You can just go to Disney World.
Yeah, you just go to Disney World in a couple of years, actually. 2 more years. 55.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. He was like, well, I got a great idea. It's a great idea. Melissa?
Yes. Next question.
Next question is iconic shot of the film. Now, I want to go over the definition of what a shot is. It's not a sequence. It's not 14 seconds of the movie. It's one single frame. If you could freeze frame it and say, that's it.
Are you starting with me?
Yep.
Okay. No, I actually have my one for this one.
Okay.
This one is when they land on the
Big Ben,
yeah. Peter Pan lands first, and then Wendy's kind of coming in.
I'm 100% in agreement with you. It's the only time it's ever going to happen. No, that was mine as well. That is mine as well. Brian.
That is mine as well. But actually, you know what?
No.
I will put a little slight twist on it. When they go to leave and Peter Pan kind of like, he takes the hand of Wendy.
I actually have to say, I do have that specifically.
Yeah, that was mine.
It's when he's starting to come back up in the air.
Yeah. That's the thing. And then you can see all four of the kids, all four of them on the hand. And that's mine.
I just like when they're landing because it goes in with the bell tones.
That's true.
No, but that's cool. But that's a sequence.
See, but that's the thing. That's not how that works. Again, it's see, bell tones is a multiple. That's not one shot. It's not one shot. That's four different moments.
No.
That's the iconic
first,
scene.
The first one.
No, that's not. See, that's the thing. There is no first. Because there's only the first implies that there's a second, and there is no second because it is only a single frame of animation.
Yeah,
one.
So when Peter first lands with the first tone,
then he's the only one there. Then he's
Wendy's
alone.
Like, no, Wendy's right behind him. Her dress is kind of floating out.
Okay, all right. So you want the very second that he hits that thing, ding, on that note. And that's it.
Dun, dun.
No. No. I don't understand.
And then they fly to Neverland. They're sitting on the cloud. They get shot by the cannons.
And then, you know, there's that part where they're all flying over London. All that.
I cannot believe that you still can't grasp this idea.
I can grasp it.
You just don't
She doesn't
want
to accept it.
I don't like it stopping.
All right. Scott.
Mine is...
you said it before. Oh, no.
Well, no, that was my nominee.
A nominee.
But my one is actually when he's in their room and he gets his shadow. Like when he just jumps up and it like becomes his shadow again.
Oh, when he's up on the wall.
Right.
I gotcha. Okay. Yep. All right.
I like that one.
And now the final question. Does this film hold up, Brian?
Definitely.
Does this film hold up, Brian?
It would not hold me up. Not many things can hold me up. I think it definitely holds up. It's one of those timeless, you know, like the message is a timeless thing. Mm-hmm. And the action is fun.
Yeah.
The animation is still good. The acting and the voice acting, like you said, is great. It's got probably the best. Gaston is my favorite villain, but I do agree with you. He's probably the most fleshed out villain that they've ever had. And he's definitely in my top three of villains as a Hook. And it's just a great movie.
Yeah, no, I think it still holds up. I mean, you have the little weird part with the Redskins, but I mean, if you just take it as
it's part of the time.
I mean, and it's nothing really like they're, you know, they're just caricatures, if anything else, but I think it holds up wonderfully.
Okay. Scott?
Yes, I agree. I think it holds up. I mean, the story and the characters have been, you know, they have the Jake and the Neverland Pirates now. They've had, you know, live action of the same, you know, story.
Yeah.
But like Brian was saying, the comedy still makes you laugh. You know, the action scenes are great, and it does, you know, it's still a fun watch.
Yeah, I think it's shown that it has longevity. I mean, just because it's shown that, you know, it still is a vital part. It's something that kids are still familiar with. I think the film works just as well as it did when it came out.
Yeah, definitely.
So I am 100% behind that. So Melissa, do you want to... So that's actually, that's unanimous on Pan.
Definitely.
That we are 100% behind it. I want to say, was Snow White one of the other ones that did that?
Snow White was, and I mean, Alice.
Alice was as well.
But
we've had a couple.
We've had a few
here and there.
But some of the other ones now.
Some of the other ones, yeah, hasn't gotten the check marks, all of it from us. But this one, it seems very unanimous, very clear.
Yeah. I think this is one of the ones, like, we can definitely turn it on again. I don't know if I'd turn on Pinocchio.
I would. I like Pinocchio. It's nice and weird, and there's a lot of great music in it. But anyways, another discussion for another time. You just want to watch, and you know, a scene from Pinocchio and call it an hour and 45 minutes long or something. Melissa.
Yes.
Had anyone this week gone over to that iTunes page and made a 5-star review?
They have. Three
can
people,
you,
in fact.
Read it for us, please?
I can. We have DisneyBoy79, Random Words.
I like it.
Good job.
Miss Dawn Baby. What's so great about this show? Please tell us.
Oh, well done.
That's nice. I forgot
about
that. Yes.
Well done.
Everything.
Yeah, actually, I should read it. Please tell us. She did the comma.
Oh, even better. Yes. Okay, that's even better. Yeah.
And then we have Watzler. Highly recommended. I highly recommend this Disney podcast. I've been listening since the start, and I thoroughly enjoy the movie reviews and the laughs. Pete, Melissa, and the gang have taken me back to the roots of my appreciation for Disney through the reviews of the movies that started it all. The other varied topics and occasional guests only add to the value the show brings. Oh, and one more thing. Random words.
Nice.
Very nice.
Yes. I have a new task. For anyone who goes to the iTunes website, I don't know why I say it that way.
Yeah, that's
that's located in the internet. If you go to iTunes, I want you to use these four words in your review. You can make a little story out of it. You can just make a sentence out of it. You can just put the words or with different, you know, different pronunciation behind each one of them. The four words are Walt, pineapple, samurai, and donut. So those words again.
Those are definitely random words.
Walt, pineapple, samurai, and donut. If you go to the iTunes page, leave a five-star review, and get those four words in there, I shall reenact that whatever you write in a dramatic prose.
Let's go for that. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, sure.
Why not? That's that it? Are we good now?
Are we good?
I think we're good.
We're good.
All right. Off to Neverland we go. Right now, you are listening to Bloom. You can find this video and more over at youtube.com/pogo. His music at soundcloud.com/pogomix. And his website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That is D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, you can search for Disney Magic Hour, and we will add you to the group. And as I said before, iTunes, head on over there. Five-star review. Use the words Walt, pineapple, samurai, donut, and I will reread it in a dramatic prose for you the next week.
And I just want to say thank you. We have over 200 Twitter followers now, so yay!
Very nice. And then you can also head over to Google Play Music and search in the podcast section and look for Disney Magic Hour. And you can also listen to us on the SoundCloud app or directly at SoundCloud. And you can find us there at soundcloud.com/Disney Magic Hour Podcast. Next week, we are going to travel below the sea, roughly 20... No, see? I almost said it wrong. You travel 20,000 leagues through the sea, not really under the sea. So they That's are fabulous. Under... Yeah, so they are under, but they're not actually 20,000 leagues under. They're traveling 20,000 leagues whilst under the sea.
Right.
Pineapple Samurai.
Pineapple Samurai Donut Walt. Say goodnight, Brian.
Good night, Brian.
Say goodnight, Melissa.
Good night, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Scott.
Good night, Scott.
Good night, Pete. And say goodnight, Pogo.